chat with Nicholas. He'll listen to you, then he'll laugh, and then he'll cry with you. It's all in a safe space for you to speak your truth. Oh, come and chat with Nick.
Hello again, everyone. We've got Michelle van der Pas with us today. She's an author, a speaker, and a coach, and is also co-founder of Grace Point Publishing. She's helped thousands and thousands of authors in her 25 years of publishing. She's got 5 best-selling books and pulls back the curtains to help nonfiction authors combine purpose, mission, and books to elevate their platforms and also their profit. So, Michelle, awesome to have you with me today. Firstly, where on earth are you?
So I'm in Colorado Springs. Ooh. And I love that you know how to pronounce my name correctly because you're from my ancestor, my husband's ancestor's part of the world. So thank you for that.
Okay. So you're our first person from Colorado. So I'm quite excited about that. So what I'd like to talk about is you've got a wonderful mantra, which is don't let your book die inside you. Unpack that a little bit. What does that mean? Yeah. And how can we get folks who've never thought of writing a book or who have a kernel of idea, how would you extract that from them or help them extract them from themselves?
Well, you got several questions in there. So I'm going to start with the mantra. Don't let your book die inside of you. Because what I found is a lot of people say, yeah, someday I'm going to write a book, or I keep having this inkling that I need to write a book. And here's what stops people. They think that because they're not writers, right? They didn't go to school for literature or writing, or they haven't written lots of stuff in their life, that they don't know how to write a book. And what happens is all that self-doubt kind of stops you from even starting, right? So we know better in other areas of our life. We want to, you know, get fit, we start walking. We want to lose weight, we start by cutting out sugar, carbs, or eating less or whatever. We know how to do first steps on other things. But when it comes to a book, we get overwhelmed and sort of like, I'm not worthy somehow. When actually, all you need to do is start taking small steps. And when people don't, they get farther along in life and then they call me in a panic. I've had this book idea for 25 years. I need to get it out, you know. And so I'm here to help people not wait until the last minute. You are worthy now. You are ready now. That's what I am for. That's what editors are for. There's so many ways to get a book out of your head, out of an idea, into a published book. There's lots of ways to do that. You don't have to be a great writer. We'll fix your writing.
Well, I think that's why God created editors, because they are a special breed of people. I wrote a chapter in a textbook, and I've never seen so much red in my entire life. I was quite offended that almost every sentence I wrote was trash.
But I want to talk about that. Can I talk about
that? Yeah, please, go ahead.
Because that is not actually, I think, of service that helps you want to write the next book, right? So I'm not trashing your editor, but that's not the way we approach writing. What I look for first is if you send me any writing, myself or one of our editors are going to look for the golden nugget. We're going to look at what's great. What's the sentence that really shines here and build off of that. I'm a big believer in build off of what's working, not what's not working. Build on your strengths, build on your purpose, what you love to do, your message that you're here to share. Now, you were in final editing to get in a textbook. That's a totally different kind of writing and totally different kind of editing. At some point, you're going to need to go through and redline and fix everything that's wrong. What we like to do, though, is get the manuscript really polished so that you never actually see all that redline. We just handle it for you. But after we've talked through and worked the book enough, worked your writing enough that you trust us to go do those final steps where you don't have to see that, because that stops you from wanting to write again, right? Makes you feel like, oh, I'm a terrible writer. But actually, that's not the truth at all. It's just that's what editors do.
Absolutely. As I mentioned, I was rather offended that my beautiful sentences were completely devoid of meaning after the editors had been at it. But it goes to different styles of writing. And I think very interestingly, the way that we write now, we have to have proper punctuation, we have to have full stop, we have to have capital letters, etc. And I read about William Blake, who's this marvelous English painter or a copper point etcher and poet and writer, and he didn't put full stops, he didn't put capitals, he made up his own words in terms of spelling. So we've been quite constrained now in terms of how we write. We have to follow the sort of Harvard or Oxford way of writing. And I think that really can constrain style and creativity. Is that something that you look at?
I think, so William Blake was very accomplished. I'm a firm believer of learning the rules and learning the structure so you have enough confidence and experience to then go break the rules. So we do use Oxford comma and edit to a certain standard. And we're collaborative. And we listen to our authors if they want to do something a certain way. We're just not going to let you put crap out if you don't have the experience or knowledge to understand when it's brilliant and when it's just not good. And so if you learn the rules, if you learn the structure, and if you don't want to learn it, that's okay. Just listen to us. We'll help you. And we'll say, actually, this is going to clean it up and tidy it up. Or we're totally creative. We're like, oh my gosh, this is so creative. We love it. But just because it's creative doesn't mean it can't use polishing and tweaking, right?
Absolutely. So they've got the big structure, the big ideas, and you are the draftsman who take that idea and polish it and make it beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes our authors aren't writers at all. Like we interview, we do ghostwriting, we're done with you writing. We'll have you audio it. There's a lot of ways to get knowledge out or get information out of your head, because we're really talking about there's writers. There are people who want to learn to write, who want to get better writing, who think they're going to know they're going to write more than one book. Like one of our authors has written like 12 books, right? And they want to get better. And that's different than some of the authors we work with who want to put out a business book, put out a memoir, maybe have a book and a workbook and maybe a follow-up book, but they're not interested in learning the craft of writing. They have other things to do in their life.
That it's such a fascinating
podcasting.
Yeah. From these podcasting, what's wonderful is that you can get transcripts and then you can use that transcript to take the main points and create a beautiful blog. And I'm going to be doing that after I've done 100 or so podcasts. I'm going to take the nuggets, words of wisdom from Nicholas from all of these podcasts. But it's a fascinating point you made there that writing a book is not the writing a book is the thing that confuses people. Because right. As you said, it's podcasts, it's interviews, it's video. And I think that's a great point to put across. You don't have to write. Perhaps you speak in a more eloquent way than you could ever write. And that's what you take down in a book, if I get that straight.
Yeah, it will need more editing to take audio and translate it into a written word. It takes a little bit more editing, but that's okay. If that's how you get it out, if that's how you can organize your thoughts, that's the most important piece. And we're talking nonfiction, right? Fiction's a whole different thing.
Yeah. So talking about editing, I was writing a letter and I put the word the in, as in the best school, for example. And I thought, oh goodness, how do I spell that? How do I tell people that I want to write the? Is it a T-H-E with an apostrophe, or not apostrophe, with an accent? Is it uppercase T or the whole thing uppercase? These are some of the challenges that somebody who's not a professional writer is going to struggle with.
None of that
and I'd never thought about it before. I had once before, but making sure that people get the right context out of the sentence,
right?
In terms of what you're trying to say.
Even the big authors who've written a book a month or a book a year, or the nonfiction authors who pump out a book every single year, they have editors for that. Don't even think for a minute you need to learn that. I don't know it. I hire editors. I don't want to learn it. That's what the editor is brilliant at. I'm going to let them go be brilliant.
Okay, it was very interesting. So if anyone wants to know the difference between the and the, it's not the old English the as in the, thou, they, right, etc. It's the most, or the apple, the queen. So it made me go down this rabbit hole of, okay, I've been using these words all these years. Do I actually know what they mean or how they're being used? And that was quite fascinating. I want to talk about your writing retreat. What is a writing retreat, and what does one do in a writing retreat?
So I offer both virtual since COVID and in-person writing retreats. When we go in person, because I think that's when people really are able to go deep, we do writing prompts. But more importantly than the writing, we do all kinds of creativity kinds of things and discussion to help really discover what's in there, what's underneath. You've got to get everything out of your head on paper and then discover what's under that bubbling up that wants to be said. So we've done all kinds of things like paint, do masks, create vision boards, write, walk, do yoga. It is about coming to something with beginner's mind so that you're forced to get your mind out of the way and tap into the creativity. Once you can do that, you'll get the gold. I work with a lot of business owners and people who have something they want to say, and they use their book to help position themselves or to help get their message out. And sometimes the message is, do these 5 steps and you'll lose 10 pounds. But maybe it's something really underneath that, like what stops you from doing these 5 steps that you know that you need to do? And is it really the weight that you want to lose, or is it a lifestyle change, or do you just want to feel great with the extra 10 pounds? What's underneath it that needs to go in the book? And creativity is the way in and the way out. And that's what we do in our writing retreats.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think they're not creative, but with a couple of prompts, it's amazing what new ideas and insights can come out of that.
Yeah, but you got to let go of the fact you're supposed to know it by the time you're an adult. If I knew how to draw, I would have been drawing by now. You got to let go of all that.
I guess it's a bit, writing is a bit like public speaking, because when you're writing, there's a blank piece of paper in front of you, or in most people's cases, a screen. And when you're speaking in front of an audience, or when we're doing a podcast like this, there's basically blank space that I've got to come up with the next word, the next question, the next sentence. It's quite terrifying, actually, thinking, okay, don't forget this point. Remember to say and, or not to say. It's quite a terrifying thing, actually. And I can contrast that with writing, is that it's quite daunting, this empty void in front of you that you've got to fill up. And I'm sure you've got techniques in that you use to, how do you deal with an empty space?
Yeah, totally. And painters talk about that too, right? The blank canvas is the most terrifying. And in painting, you just throw something on the canvas. It doesn't matter. You learn to just put that first brush stroke down, because you can always fix it later. And writing is the same. Podcasting is the same. Now, as you get more experience, that first brush stroke will have more intention behind it. Maybe you're choosing your color more carefully. Maybe you're choosing where on the paper to put it, right? It'll be more intentional. Same with writing. But what I teach is you write and about anything that you can see right in front of you. You don't write to your book. There's all kinds of techniques, because really what you're talking about is a little bit of writer's block. Like you see the blank page and you freeze. You write about what's inside of you. You write about what you feel, how you felt when you got up in the morning. You just journal for 10 or 15 minutes. And you let go, again, you have to let go of the expectation that everything you do is supposed to be perfect and ready for publication. Or if you knew how to do it, you would be knowing it by now, right? We have all these expectations as an adult. And when you let all of that go, come in with beginner's mind, come in with a creative, open mindset. I wonder what's possible. I wonder what's going to come out of my head, my gut, my emotion, I write today and come at it with wonder and curiosity, that really helps writer's block and helps that blank page. And I think also helps speaking, right? Public speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. I do a very fun exercise with my class, which is based on an English radio show called Just a Minute. And basically, you've got to talk for 1 minute on a subject, a random subject that you don't know, that you haven't been told in advance, for 1 minute without hesitation, repetition, or deviation from that topic. And most people last 5 to 10, maximum 15 seconds, and then there's the blank. And I've seen, as you've been doing it more in the class, how they're getting more comfortable. They're becoming more aware of saying ums and ahs. They are being more aware of their breathing, more aware of closing their mouth and thinking before the next sentence comes out of their head. And it goes to your point, and you spoke about journaling, that this is you've got to practice to be good. You don't magically overnight become a sensational author or creative. It's something that you need to practice, and it's a craft. And there are quite a few different techniques for writing, as I understand it. There are those who, I think like Hemingway, he woke up at the same at 4 o'clock or something every morning and wrote for 2 hours and then fell asleep or got drunk for the rest of the day. There's no one technique that everyone should use. And you need to experiment to find which one of those work for you.
And to circle back around, most of the people I think that you and I are talking about don't necessarily want to become writers. They want to publish a book and share their message, or get on a podcast and share their message. And so you do have to find a rhythm that works for you to get this book finished, not to become a better writer for the rest of your life, unless that's one of your goals, but at least for now to get this book finished. So it's about your rhythm, your cycle, what technique works every day, every Sunday, once a month. I have to lock myself in a closet, basically.
How addictive is it once you publish a book to want to do another one? So you talk about people saying they've got one story in them. Do you find that some people, once they've gone through this process and they've gotten the one book out, they think, wait a minute, I love this. I like the buzz. I like the thought of being of having a book out. I've got more ideas. Have you found that, or do people shut off after the one book?
I think about half the people I work with find that they have another book inside of them. I don't think it's because of the buzz. I think it's because they feel like, okay, I said this, and lo and behold, there is more to say. Wow, I have another creative funnel, right? That high about publishing a book was pretty short-lived. But I think that you publish it and then you tap back into your own intuition and your business and whatever you're doing in life. And then that creativity starts to bubble up again. So about half the people have a second book, I think.
Let's talk about book publishing. And I'm going to talk about it from end to end, because having a book idea is one thing. Having one copy of it that you've created sitting on your bookshelf might be enough for some people. But can you tell me a bit about the modern publishing industry? How, and have you had any bestsellers on, and maybe talk through how, in the publishing process, how did you become a bestseller?
All right. So, good news and bad news. Good news is the modern being last 5 years, publishing. The good news is, power's in the people's hands. You want to publish? You can write a book, put it up on Amazon, and publish. The bad news is power's in the people's hands. So there's a lot of really bad stuff out there. I get a lot of people who come to me and say, I wrote 3 books, or I wrote a book, or I wrote a series of books, and they're not selling at all. Am I a terrible writer? And what I can see is that they got the book out, but they didn't get the business of the publishing underneath as a foundation, right? So they don't have a good book cover, even though they think it's good. It doesn't stack up. It would never stack up on a bookshelf or at a bookstore. So you've got to have a good cover. You have to have a really great synopsis. You have to have a good interior. I got a book that I ordered from Amazon from someone who is fairly well known in the coaching industry, and the inside of the book was really bad. And it just, you can tell it wasn't professionally laid out. They just threw up an unformatted Word doc. And she said, hey, I'm published. It doesn't up-level you if the book doesn't represent who you are and where you're going, right? So the good news is, yes, you can go do it all yourself. And for some people, it will be good enough, especially for people who are very detail-oriented and really want to look through all those things. It's like building a house from scratch. Do you want to be the person in charge? Do you want to be your contractor? Or do you want to hire a contractor? That's the analogy I give. If you do a book properly, it takes a little bit of time. Everybody wants to get their book published in 90 days and all that. You can, but to test titles, to test a book cover, to make sure you get the synopsis right, to start your marketing plan, to make sure it's edited professionally, to get some advanced reviews, to make sure that the book is landing with your audience, with some beta readers or some outside input. All of these things help a book do better. Will they become bestsellers? Yeah, I would say 99% of the books I work on are bestsellers. What does that mean? Nothing. Pulling back the curtain, as we talked about in my bio, a bestseller, you can get to be an Amazon bestseller with not very many book sales. It takes some manipulation. It takes some thought. You have to do a book launch. You have to choose your keywords properly. You have to get all your metadata in sync. You have to email and get people on board. But if you know how to do all of those things, you'll become a bestseller. Will you become number one? Maybe, maybe not. Will you become in the top 10? Probably. Are you in the top 10 for more than 10 minutes? Maybe, maybe not. And so part of it is a little bit of smoke and mirrors. And it's really cool to be able to say I was an Amazon number one bestseller, right? So you go in with your eyes wide open that I'm going to work hard to be a bestseller. I may not sell lots of books, but it'll be super cool and I'll be able to say I did it. Now, the other bestseller lists like USA Today is gone. Wall Street Journal has a different process. New York Times has a different process. Amazon's pretty easy. Those other ones are not as easy, but certainly attainable if you have a good book.
Yeah, that on that Amazon point, I heard there are 6,400 categories in Amazon. So basically, if you talk about garden gnomes, you could have a best-selling garden gnome book in the garden gnome section. So
yeah,
again,
part of the game, yeah.
Yeah. So it's really, if you're a New York bestseller, New York Times bestseller, that obviously has a slightly different cachet to being an Amazon bestseller.
It does, and I know very famous authors who are New York Times bestsellers who bought their way, didn't buy their way into the list, but really bought their way through PR, buying books, having specific people buy books, right? So just like any industry, money talks, whether you agree with it or not, isn't the point. It's true. And so the more money you have in any industry, but in publishing, the more you can buy your way into certain places. And I always talk through how much is that going to help you? Like, we can go get New York Times bestseller. If you've got the money, we can do it. Is that really what you want? Is that going to help you? Maybe. But for most people, they don't need it. For most people.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to goals. So what is your point of this book? Do you want the whole, should it be a free downloadable book that everyone can share and enjoy, or are you trying to make money out of it? And I believe the publishing industry is not one necessarily where you will make a fortune. And I know this because I've published a best-selling book, not my own, it's my grandfather's book. It is republished after 50 years and was a bestseller in South Africa. And a bestseller is 2,000 copies because people don't read or people don't buy books anymore. And the price of the book, for example, is $12. And I think we got $2.50 per book. It was done through a proper publisher, but they did PR, TV, radio, right. SEO, right. the whole shebang. And like you said, it's a business. If you're going into this industry, you've got to go in with your eyes wide open in terms of the realities. So you might write the best book that has ever been written, but if you don't have PR, if you don't do SEO, if you don't do your metadata, like meta tags and that, like you mentioned, nobody's going to read it.
And if you're publishing, so there's a lot of reasons to write and publish a book, right? You could write a book to help people subscribe to your podcast, right? And if you get 1 million more subscribers, or 200,000 more subscribers, or 10,000 more subscribers, any of those might be worth writing a book for. You might write a book, so let's pretend you're a PR agency and you write a book. If that goes out to one client and they pay you $20,000 for PR, is that worth writing a book? Absolutely. And then you'll probably get more of those, right? If you write a book and it leads to your course and you get people downloading your course, yes. If you write a book because you've been through something traumatic and you have a message to share out in the world and you're helping other people, does that need to be monetized? That's a whole different question. Sometimes doing good in the world and doing what you're here to do and sharing your message and helping other people and inspiring other people because of the journey you've been on is enough. Whether or not you ever get your editing money back.
But strangely enough, it's typically those books that are the standouts because you're doing it from an artistic process versus focusing on the short-term money. So they typically might have some longevity in them.
Maybe. And it depends on how you market it and so forth.
Yeah. The last thing I want to chat about is you're a speaker as well. And I saw a lovely photo of you in front of a TED audience. Talk to me about public speaking and your process of getting ready for a TED Talk, because a TED Talk is something quite special.
You're going to love this story. My process for getting ready for my TED Talk was curling up in a ball and crying for 12 hours. Oh, that's not necessarily what I recommend, and I don't do that anymore, but that was my process. I was terrified. I did not feel prepared. This was a decade ago now. And could I have done better? Yes. But when I got to the other side, did I feel like, oh my gosh, I did that? Yes. And did I get confidence and wisdom and experience? Yes. So for other people and for myself now, what I really recommend doing is knowing your subject matter inside and out, because if your slides go down, if your notes are away in TED, you're supposed to memorize your talk. If your mind goes blank, if you know your subject matter inside and out, it's not going to matter. You can pick up your thread. You can pick up your thought. You can keep going. And Brené Brown talks about how before she did her TED Talk, which is one of the most famous out there, she would go anywhere and everywhere and practice her talk, like to people at the bar and at the coffee shop. And she said, hey, do you mind if I give you an 18-minute talk? And she just practiced it over and over and over again everywhere. And the results speak for themselves. She has one of the most famous TED Talks ever.
That point about knowing your subject is something I learned from Margaret Thatcher, who's somebody I admire tremendously. And she wiped the floor with everybody, both in her own cabinet and the opposition benches, because she knew all the facts. She was well-briefed. She knew what she was going to talk about, and nothing could put her off her stride. So I would again encourage folks who are going to do talks, like you said, practice, 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 practice. You can't do it on the day and expect it to be beautiful. I did a podcast earlier where I had written my notes, And I thought, okay, I'm set for the interview. And I was starting to read the introduction, and there's a new word, an enormous word that I didn't actually read properly. And I had to do it about three times. I was like, oh, I look like such a buffoon. So I made sure I read my questions before I spoke to you today to make sure I pronounced and pronounced everything correctly. Yeah, so some good examples there. And it, again, all these folks as great public speakers had to start off somewhere, whether it's curled up in a ball crying or practicing in a bar. And I think those are some great tips. And again, it's just practice, practice, practice. The last thing I want to talk to you about is I'm obviously doing a bit of snooping and going around, looking at blogs, looking at your previous interviews and onto your LinkedIn page. What is something interesting about you that we haven't perhaps discussed today that might be of interest to our listeners?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think something that sometimes comes as a surprise, but I actually use every single day when talking with people, is that I am a doctor of divinity. I'm not even sure my publishing team even knows that, but I do it because it means I come from the heart first. I come from a place that I honor the spirit in every single person I talk to and their person, their purpose, their message. And I use it every day, but I think most people are surprised to hear that.
I definitely felt it throughout this podcast because you've got such a lovely style, warm style to it. It's been such a pleasure talking to you, Michelle. I would recommend that people check out your website and they check out some of the courses that you've got, because I saw you've got a whole range of interesting courses there that for a whole bunch of different needs and requirements. Where can I send people to find out a little bit more information about what you do, the retreats, your courses, and your publishing?
Yeah. The easiest place is michellecoaches.com. It's easy to spell. It'll take you to my author work, my purpose work. You can book a call with me. You can follow me on Facebook. You can even text me. So michellecoaches.com.
Awesome. I'll stick that in the show notes and on the screen so that everyone has seen that. But Michelle, thank you so much. It's been such a treat speaking to you. And I'm actually, since we've been talking, I'm thinking, okay, I've got to get off my behind and do my book as well. And I've got a whole bunch, so I've got to filter them out and decide which
I want to help you.
First.
Book a call with me. Let's go.
I'll do that. I'd love that. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
Come chat with Nicholas. He'll listen to you. Then he'll laugh and then he'll cry with you. It's all in a safe space for you to speak your truth. Oh.